Welcome to the Palm Beach County Medical Society podcast series, MedTalk. I'm Abby Strauss, and thank you for joining us. James Goldenberg is a physician in Southeast Florida who has recently become very active in the administrative components of the practice of medicine. This includes the addressing of many concepts and understanding medical care and its cost and payment modalities. It can be very confusing. So he graciously agreed to discuss some of this with us. And Dr. Goldenberg, thank you so much for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Everyone agrees that the cost of medical care is rising, but it's confusing, as we just talked about, all the new financial terms and approaches. Let's begin with some basic definitions. What is meant by cost transparency? How does this concept maintain a quality of care even at lower prices?
Sure. Cost transparency is a very important topic in medicine. It simply means that the person that buys the service, the medical care from a physician, the medical equipment, the test or the drug, understands how much it costs, not only to them, but to the system as a whole, and that the physician that orders the test also has a line of sight into the cost of that test. Imagine a situation where the person who orders the test and the person who uses or buys that test don't understand how much it costs. That's a situation where costs rise, and that trickles down to everybody's insurance premiums, and it affects the sustainability of the Medicare program. Now, you asked about quality. And I would say to you, they're tied inexplicably hand in hand. Low cost has to be tied to good quality. But cost transparency in itself doesn't really measure quality. You need a separate set of systems to ensure fair and reasonable price, high quality, and that they're matched together.
Is this becoming the standard modality by which people are going to have to, shall we say, negotiate prices? One of the terms that keeps coming up is value-based medicine. Again, sir, I'm speaking half out of confusion as well, because I don't understand all these terms, and that's why I'm so glad that you're here. Value-based medicine, is that different than cost transparency?
It is, because value-based medicine does exactly what we left the last question off with. It combines cost and quality. So high-quality, reasonable cost translates to value, and we all seek value in every purchase that we make. And somehow, medicine has inexplicably avoided this value equation. But if you were to buy a toaster on Amazon or you went to a car dealer today, you would negotiate and understand the price very clearly. You'd start with the sticker on the window, which we don't have in healthcare, then you'd negotiate. But you'd also have a sense of quality because you'd be able to go on the internet and go to a site where other folks have rated that car. High value healthcare, high quality, reasonable cost.
So how does this work in the real life process of going to see a doctor? You call up, does the patient have the right to say, what are your costs? Is that something that's coming, or is it still going to be a standardized form somewhere or a number buried in an insurance issue that people don't understand? How do people know how to use the system?
Yeah, that's a great question. The concept is evolving. So I think people should be, I'm not sure they'd want to walk into a doctor's office and ask how much the visit costs. Well, right away, they might do that already, or how much the lab test costs. But there are ways you can measure this. For example, the governor of the state of Florida recently signed an executive order that mandates hospitals to share some of their costs with patients, to publish them. So you can go online and you can see some of this stuff. Understanding your insurance benefits a little bit more carefully, asking when appropriate how much healthcare costs, and using online tools to reduce costs to the system and therefore save money and perhaps share in those savings without a measure of quality. But there are many measures of quality now, and they run the gamut from national measures mandated by the Medicare program and those that oversee it, to the health plans, which actually will now publish quality and cost markers for doctors. They'd be a preferred provider, showing that they do have reasonable cost and high quality. So again, online tools, working with your health insurer, looking at national sites, there are many ways to compare and ensure that this is not just a game of reducing cost at the expense of quality, that you can reduce costs for the system, for the patients, and maintain quality.
Will it be possible for someone to go outside of the system? If a doctor chooses not to be part of an insurance program, can they still charge independently and the patient pay independently?
It happens. It's rare. In order to do that, essentially, you have to opt out of the Medicare system, which is the standard, obviously, government-run healthcare system. And there are many rules and regulations, and there's fairly big disincentives to do that. But there are several doctors that do that. There are some locally do that, and patients can then negotiate directly with the doc.
What happens when something is really complex? What happens if somebody has a medical condition that's just not easy to diagnose, or it's going to be costly because this is going to take a very long time? Do these systems incorporate that, or is there an endpoint? Is there an allotment of sorts? What happens when it's an unusual case? How does it get brought into these systems?
Yeah, it's actually a very good question. So there are many cases that are complex, as you say, or require cutting-edge technology or new technology. And there's a lot of press about the cost of some of the new drugs that are coming out, and some people need those drugs. And the system does accommodate it. So the risk of a high-cost claimant or somebody that requires expensive medical care is built into the system, as you suggest, by averaging that patient's experience amongst many different patients, not just 10 or the 25 in your neighborhood or the 100 in your community, but averaging across thousands or tens of thousands of patients. The other way that high-cost claimants are handled in this value-based world is that some people that hold the risk and have to pay that bill actually obtain insurance for high-cost claimants. And so the insurance covers those costs, and the insurance company picks up the excess cost, and that patient is still able to get exactly the care they need for their problem.
Okay, let me bring another term to the table. We hear occasionally something called an alternative payment model. What does that mean, please?
So the traditional way that doctors get paid is fee for service. And fee for service indicates that when you use a medical visit or a piece of equipment, you pay for it. And either you pay a copay or you pay for all of it at that time, your insurance will pay the rest, and every interaction with the system charges a fee. Some would say that it incentivizes the medical system to do more, something called volume instead of value. So the value-based system suggests that we pay people in different ways, not just for every encounter with the system, but perhaps for keeping people healthy. There's value to not going to the doctor many times a year or having to go to the emergency room. So things like wellness or paying doctors for episodes of care. So not for every touch, but if a doctor performs a procedure, the payment would include that procedure and the subsequent care and any complications that come in. So alternate payment models are new ways to pay physicians for the way that they deliver care that incentivizes high quality, reasonable cost. And there are specific definitions of what these mean for federally funded programs.
So if someone has very bad asthma, they go to the emergency room, they are taken care of, they have to be followed by their private physicians. Would an alternative pay model then, and if I'm using the wrong word, please correct me, bundle all these together, a flat payment for the episode of the asthma attack and subsequent follow-ups?
Yeah, so there are several payment models that in fact bundle things in an episode of care. So an asthma emergency room visit might create a bundle or an episode of care that goes for 90 days after. And of course, the incentive would be to make sure the patient has the right preventive medicine so they don't return to the emergency room, which is an uncomfortable thing for the patient and a high cost event for the health system. And asthma may not be the best example, but the examples that are playing out in real life include bundles or episodes of care for joint replacements, bundles or episodes of care for stroke and heart failure and some serious diseases. And that's just one example of a type of alternative payment model.
In psychiatry, it gets very complex because of the long-term presence of the pathology. I would assume that that applies to different medical specialties as well. Are these being subdivided, shall we say, per specialty? Is there an effort to try to segregate the treatment of a schizophrenia versus a joint replacement, both intensive, both necessary, both complex?
You make a good point that each specialty has a different set of diseases and a different intensity of those diseases. And so some of the current alternative payment models cross from oncology to cardiology to orthopedics to neurology. I'm personally not aware of any in psychiatry. I would tell you that there are physicians that are value-based minded and thought leaders in every specialty society that are trying to develop alternative payment models, new ways to get paid, to keep people healthy, to keep them out of the hospital, and to be fair and thoughtful with the compensation.
One of the things also that is confusing, we talked about it as we were talking about some of the questions we wanted to address, is the confusion that someone has when they get a medical bill. I've seen it from my own. I don't understand the charges, the this, the that. Is there any effort to simplify that?
And I agree with you. I have the same problem. When the explanation of benefits arrives in the mail, that's the statement from the insurance company called an EOB. I don't find very much of an explanation there myself. And as someone that's in this every day and thinking about this, I get confused as well. That's really from the insurance side and would involve some insurance reform. I don't really have a story about that with you. And that is, there is a new insurance company called Oscar. Sounds like a person, but it's an insurance company. And the whole genesis of the formation of this company was that the president and CEO received an explanation of benefits for care of a family member that he didn't understand and is committed to redesign that process from the ground up, from the insurance side of this, not from the physician side, to really be able to be, and we're circling back to your first question, transparent in where the money flows and what the costs are, and particularly what the patients are responsible for. So there are people thinking about this.
One of the charges that has been against medicine, it is what's commonly called overutilization of medical services. How does a patient have any idea what's necessary or not? I make the joke, and I respect my dentist very much, but he looks into my mouth. I have no idea what he's seeing. He tells me, and I have to believe him. How does that translate to what's going on in medicine?
Well, it's a great question. So if a patient walks in, and I'm a neurologist, to a neurologist's office, and tells a story, neurologist A might order 5 tests, and neurologist B might use their clinical judgment, and they would come to the same conclusion. So my question for your audience is, which is better, neurologist A that ordered 5 tests, or neurologist B that made the decision, same decision, with clinical judgment? One could argue that the person who used clinical judgment did a better job. However, from the patient experience, when they come out, having had 5 tests and being told what is wrong or what is not, they'll often say, wow, that doctor was very thorough and the other one wasn't. And so you're really balancing cost and quality and patient experience and doing the right thing. So to be more specific in the answer to your question, again, I would say there is some information online that talks about the doctor's utilization and where it compares to their peers. And I think that's a great way to start. The government publishes information, insurance companies do. And I think finding somebody who's in range with their peers and not an outlier on either side would be the best place to start.
We also see a very large movement of people using the walk-in clinics. They may not have a private physician, and they don't want to go to the emergency room. The emergency rooms are very expensive. From what you see, is this a good movement, or are we simply fragmenting a process because there isn't a consistency of a single doctor? Someone has a neurological problem, they come to you, then they see someone else, and they see someone else, and pretty soon no one knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
There's two themes in there, and one is, what is the best site of service? Urgent care center versus the hospital? I'd expand that spectrum. Is the best site of service, one, having somebody to reach on the phone when you're not sure what to do or where to go or what's wrong with you? Having the option to hook up to a video on your computer and having a telehealth visit, which is convenient, not very expensive? Going to an urgent care center, if that's the appropriate site of service, and when one is really sick, going to the emergency room. The problem, of course, with the system is that people gravitate to the emergency room because of the lack of availability of some of those other options. And again, that's expensive. That takes the attention away from people that are really sick if somebody's going in for a minor illness to the emergency room. So value-based care would try to make available the right service at the right place at the right time in the most convenient way for the patient to get their question answered. The second part of your question was fragmentation and communication, and that's a real issue. The electronic health record has been a challenge for the medical system, particularly for doctors. It does put information in there, but some of them don't talk to each other. Interoperability between health records from different sites of service, your example, the urgent care center to the office, is key. A lot of people working on it. We are not where we need to be yet. I hope we get there in the future.
Okay. One of my pressing personal issues is that when I discuss this with other physicians, most of them really have an elementary school level understanding of all of this. That may not be the best way of putting it. It may be a tad too harsh. But do you find that physicians are understanding this? Do you find that physicians are pleased that all of this is happening? What has been your experience as you've gone more into administrative aspects of things? Do they go, that's your problem. I just want to see my patients. You figure it out.
Yeah, so that is my experience. Physicians are in this line of work to practice medicine, to help people. Some of them enjoy some of the business opportunities, but in general, I think they'd rather focus on clinical activities. I think physicians as a whole are change averse. I don't think physicians are as in tune to this as they should. I think one of my personal passions is to educate physicians on this, which is why I'm enjoying spending time with you today and sharing this information with the folks that are listening. I think physicians need to take opportunities to learn about changes in rules and regulations. Physicians need to lead the changing healthcare landscape. Physicians should not rely on business folks to guide us. And so your question is correct. I hope more people learn about all the things that we're talking about today.
Where would a physician go to become educated on this? Do you have any place that we can aim them?
There are podcasts like yours that have great information, but really on a local level, the county medical societies, they haven't had a lot of information either online or groups that are studying this, the American Medical Association. There are leadership classes and opportunities and groups of physicians that gather probably around the country and around the world to study this.
As you said, we tend to be rather change resistant, and for many of us, it's a whole new vocabulary. And it's a new way of doing things. I agree with you very much that we have to not let medicine be controlled entirely by business. Practice of making people better, and have to do it in a realistic way, of course. This has been really interesting. Thank you so much. Jim Goldenberg is a physician, as I said at the beginning, who is now more in the administrative aspect of medicine, and he's explained some of the terms and some of the questions that are in many people's mind, including me, and I thank you so much for being here, sir.
Thank you. Enjoyed it very much.